Is there God in heaven? The Bible says yes. Nature says yes. The Apostle Paul said in Romans 1 verse 20 that the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Paul says that there is no excuse for a man to be an atheist. There is no excuse for a man being a skeptic or an agnostic. And yet we have people, in answer to this question, is there a God in heaven, who say no. As a matter of fact, over the last few generations, we've had an increasing amount of people who are more and more vocal in their skepticism and in their atheism. Why do they do this? What kind of arguments do they give? How do they try to prove their theory, and how do they try to disprove the Bible? Well, what we're going to do in this series of broadcast is to talk about two things that are oftentimes used in the hands of skeptics and atheists. Number one, the theory of evolution, and number two, the problem of evil. And today, we're going to begin with the theory of evolution. Now, let's go back to 1925. The place was Dayton, Tennessee. The occasion was a court case over a teacher accused of teaching evolution in one of our public schools. That teacher was John T. Scopes. Earlier that year, a bill had been passed in the Tennessee legislature that made it against the law to teach contrary to the creation account of Genesis in public schools. Yes, you heard that right. It used to be against the law in the state of Tennessee to teach evolution in a public school. As a matter of fact, that law, which was passed on March the 21st of 1925, said this: "Be it enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Tennessee, that it shall be unlawful for any teacher in any universities, normals, or other public schools in the state, which are supported in whole or in part by the public school funds of the state, to teach the theory that denies the story of the divine creation of man as taught in the Bible, and to teach instead that man has descended from a lower order of animals." That's the law as it was originally passed in the state of Tennessee on March the 21st, 1925. Now, obviously, skeptics and atheists wanted to quickly test that law so that they could eventually overturn it. So what happened, of course, was that the attention of the whole nation was turned to the small town of Dayton, Tennessee. The top lawyers of the country were brought in to represent the two sides, and reporters filled that small town. William Jennings Bryan, a Bible-believing attorney, represented the state of Tennessee. Clarence Darrah, a very liberal-minded skeptic and a hater of the Bible, defended John T. Scopes. This event became a lightning rod for controversy, but it also did something else. It showed that the nation had begun to divide already on the role of the Bible in public life. Now, that's still a controversy to this day, but that began a long time ago, according to what we're looking at. The nation had already begun to disagree on the role of the Bible when it came to public life here in America. Now, generations later, the laws are reversed. Today, public schools are required to teach evolution, and teaching creation is against the law. But let's go back even farther. Let's go back to ancient Greece, over 2,000 years ago. And I'm going to take you back to a Greek philosopher named Anaximander. We really don't have any of his writings, but we have the writings of one philosopher named Thales, who tells us about Anaximander. And what we find, folks, is that this man, who lived several hundred years before Jesus was born, actually taught a rough form of evolution. Now, we think that evolution is really of common origin, that it's a recent doctrine, but not really. I'm looking at what Thales said about this man, and he said that Anaximander said this: that in the beginning, man was born from animals of another species. Now again, this is a Greek philosopher writing over 2,000 years ago, and he said that man, in the beginning, was born from animals of another species. Now, I can't prove, and I don't know that the Apostle Paul knew about this, but he may have. He could have, because Paul was an educated man. He was a widely read man. You say, well, I thought that Paul was a Jewish scholar. I thought that he was trained in the schools of the rabbis, the Jewish experts in the law. He was. But in those schools, they also studied the writings of the Greeks. And we know that because the Apostle Paul quoted from some of those Greek philosophers and poets in Acts chapter 17. Now, how did he know what those Greek philosophers said? How did he know their writings well enough to quote from them? Paul had read them. And so in reading some of these Greek philosophers, it may have been that he either heard of the idea of evolution or had read the idea of evolution that we're talking about here to this day. And if so, it's interesting that Paul did not specifically go after or refute that doctrine other than to say what he did in the book of Romans, that there were some who were professing themselves to be wise, but they became fools and they turned to all kinds of idols. Well, that's a matter that we can't settle, but it is something of interest and at least a possibility. But what we do find, folks, is that it is certain that although this man that we're looking at, who lived hundreds of years before Jesus Christ, did not teach the kind of evolution or the extent of the idea of evolution that we hear about today, he did teach a crude form of it. He did have the general concept that man came from lower forms of life. And so again, Thales says that this man, Anaximander, said that in the beginning, man was born from animals of another species, for while other animals quickly find nourishment for themselves, man alone needs a lengthy period of suckling, so that had he been originally as he is now, he could have never survived. So that's his reasoning. That's why the man said that we must have come from lower forms of life. So I'm simply saying, folks, that it was many years later, as a matter of fact, in 1859, that Charles Darwin wrote the book Origin of Species. And it was in that book that he tried to show that humans evolved from lower forms of life, that is, from animals. Now, today in some circles, the doctrine of evolution is accepted and assumed as fact, especially in our universities today. Less than 100 years ago, it was against the law to teach evolution in public schools in Tennessee. Now, it is required by law. But the theory of evolution is false. It is logically absurd. It is without scientific proof. Somebody says, well, but that's just not true. There's all kinds of science and scientific evidence for the theory of evolution. Well, folks, science is based on observation. Now, there was nobody in the evolutionary camp that was there to see and to observe the process of evolution taking place. That is, the evolution of an animal into a human being. Folks, what this is myth. This is the product of man's imagination as he's trying to get away from the concept of God, and more particularly, as man is trying to escape from the law of God. You see, man has a faculty called imagination. And if he wants to lie to himself, he can do that. If he wants to invent some kind of fable, he can do that. To try to get around the pain of his conscience or the idea and the feeling that he is answerable to something or someone, a power beyond himself. So man has come up with, he has concocted this idea of evolution, I believe, for that reason and for other reasons. It is not true. And it can be proven to be false for many reasons. Number one, evolution does not and cannot explain the question of origins. Where did man come from? Begs another question. And that is, where did everything come from? where did all of this come from? And of course, we've had some very educated men in terms of worldly education, in terms of secular education, who said, well, what you have to understand is that life has evolved over billions and billions of years. And then when you ask the question, okay, where did that first life come from? Well, it came from the water. Well, where did the water come from? Where did the ground come from? Well, there were gases in the beginning, and those gases exploded. They combined and they exploded, and then everything just started growing eventually, and that's how we got here. Well, when we ask them the question, well, where did those gases come from? They have no explanation. Why did those gases appear? Where did they come from? Where is the origin, or what is the origin of all this? Evolution has absolutely no answer, and yet it tries to give us the solution to the whole problem. Evolution does not and cannot explain the design that is in the world, the design that it took to create all of these things, and the design that it takes to continue to have these things in the world. And I'm talking about everything from the sun, the moon, the stars, the seasons of the year, the animals, the plants, man himself, his body. All of these things show that there is a designer, folks. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utter speech, and night unto night shows knowledge. Psalm 19, verses 1 and 2. Now, evolution cannot explain this. Evolution simply says that blind chance caused all of this not only to happen initially, but to continue to be the case. Now that, folks, is ridiculous. That is absurd. There's some of these people that laugh at the Bible and laugh at the idea of God. Folks, this is absurdity, and this is nothing but myth. Evolution cannot explain and does not explain the free will of man. Man is not a being who is determined by biological forces. We have free will. We make choices. As a matter of fact, we can even make choices that go against what we feel in our bodies. There was one man that was a famous atheist. His name was Anthony Flew. Flew was an atheist for most of his life, but in his early 80s, he decided that he was a believer in God. Now, he didn't believe in the same kind of God that we believe in as Christian people, but at least he did acknowledge that he had been wrong in his atheism for all those years. And one of the things he said moved him on that was that atheism cannot explain the free will of man. By the free will of man, I'm talking about the ability to make choices for ourselves. Animals don't think through things. They don't reason through their situation and make a decision. They act by instinct. Man behaves by choice. Flew said that atheism cannot account for the fact that man can actually go against what he feels and what he desires. A man can desire food, but he can go on a diet. Atheism can't explain that because animals certainly don't go on diets. They don't reason in their minds and say, you know what, I need to cut back on what I'm eating here. Man can do that because man has a soul. Man has reason. And what we're going to do in the next broadcast is to talk even further about the fact that atheism cannot account for the conscience of man, and it absolutely cannot account for this thing that we call right and wrong.